In an election that will determine the fate of the entire universe, there's only one podcast holding politicians accountable. Scott Morrison, Anthony Albanese. Who will lose? Find out on The Chaser Report, Election Edition.
Hello and welcome to The Chaser Report. It is Wednesday, the 11th of May. That means 10 days to go until the election. I'm Dom Knight. Hello, Charles Firth. You look upset.
Yes, another major stuff up from Anthony Albanese yesterday. He was asked about the wage case that's coming up in the Fair Work Commission shortly after the election. And he said that wages should not go backwards. He said that it should keep up with inflation, that the amount that you get paid this year should be the same as the amount that you get paid last year in real time.
Gosh, that's naive. The whole point of the Fair Work Commission is to allow politicians to just push that whole thing until after the election and not have to comment on it.
Well, it was seen as a huge gaffe by everybody, including the Liberal Party, who just jumped on it and said, how disgraceful that you'd want wages to keep up with inflation. I mean, you know, this is a cost of living election. Isn't the whole point about the cost of living, things should get more expensive?
Hang on, politicians' wages are set by a separate process, aren't they? They'll just go up regardless.
They do actually tend to attract higher than inflation. So
yeah, that's a huge relief.
But look, the scare campaigns, the attack ads have already started on this issue, and I think it's a real weakness for Albo. I can't see how he's going to be able to wiggle out of this one.
Anthony Albanese has a plan to raise your wages. He wants them to keep up with the cost of buying bread, milk, even surgery for transgender kids. Probably got that policy from Xi Jinping himself.
Authorised by the Liberal Party, Canberra. I'm talking very fast because I want to cram in as much work as I can get before Anthony Albanese raises my wage.
On today's show, we answer more of your questions with the proviso that they have to be stupid questions. Stupid questions only is a segment. Got it in today.
Plus, we're talking to David Shoebridge. He's a New South Wales Greens upper house politician, and he is the person who came up with this whole Greens policy of paying artists a wage to create art.
When he's running for the Senate in New South Wales, so he's trying to get on the public teat as well.
Oh, that's what it's about. But first of all, let's go and have a really wise rundown of what's been happening in the election in the last 24 hours with me.
Oh, good. More you.
Hello, this is the wrap for Wednesday, the 11th of May, and it's Gaff City again. For Anthony Albanese, after he said he thought workers' wages shouldn't go backwards.
I deliberately want to see wages increase, and I will.
The entire political class immediately jumped on the stupid error. Imagine thinking workers' wages should keep up with the cost of living. What a bozo.
No, I'm attacking him for being thoughtless. I'm attacking him for not having a clue about the economy.
Good luck if you vote Labor this election. Your wages might rise. Hell, if you believe some of the pundits in the Fin Review, your wages might even explode until they're so big you can buy anything you want. Don't want to risk that. Meanwhile, Scott Morrison's campaign to keep saying ignorant things is on track, with the Prime Minister yesterday implying that under 18 trans kids were popping down to their local conversion clinics and chugging down gender bender pills without a thought given to the whole thing.
What we're talking about here is gender reversal surgery for young adolescents.
The distraction from climate, cost of living, China, COVID, or pretty much any topic that actually affects most people is doing wonders for the election chances of senior Liberals in inner city seats, whose constituents tend to not be ignorant transphobes. With Josh Frydenberg, Peter Dutton, Tim Wilson and Dave Sharma all at real risk of losing their seats, one has to wonder whether part of Morrison's cunning plan is to knock off all his potential leadership contenders so that he's not contested for the position of opposition leader after the election. And Schrödinger's Education Minister Alan Tudge has been spotted in the wild in a rare appearance for the embattled Christian Conservative who has affairs with staffers.
Well, Stuart Robert is the acting Education Minister at the moment since I've been stood down, so he'd be the appropriate person to do that.
Mr. Tudge explained his apparent absence from the spotlight, saying he'd been very busy in his local electorate. Busy or bizarre? That's the wrap for Wednesday the 11th of May. Back in a sec.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Chaser Report.
One of our major projects throughout the course of this election has been to break Chaser writer John Delmenico. Not only have we made him watch Sky News around the clock, but we've also made him, Charles, read all of the crap soft focus puff pieces that have been done during the course of the campaign. What? How has he not quit?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I asked for my workload to change after, on top of my regular workload that was already full-time doing Sky News. And then I somehow ended up getting more work of reading all the fluff pieces that have been coming out in print media lately.
Yeah, so this is all the stuff that just sort of pays homage to our leaders and sort of propaganda.
If you say propaganda, I'm reading them and they're just making me hate the people.
Right, so give us an example.
So Josh Frydenberg had a 3-page spread at the Herald Sun with photos of him and his kids saying, "This is the fight for my life." He spoke about the fake independence, which is a blatant lie. They're not fake, they are independents. And so it's like, am I supposed to like the guy more because he has kids while he's lying instead of just lying on his own?
Was this the same place where it was revealed that he pays his kids $20 whenever they lose a tooth? Because that to me is the most damning indictment.
My favourite thing about that was that Labour's guy also was like, yeah, that's how much you pay kids when they lose a tooth.
Well, of course Labour agreed with the Liberal policy on tooth fairy.
Yeah, both treasurers think that $20 a tooth is a reasonable amount.
That is just extraordinary. Like, kids have, like, 20 teeth. That's, like, $400.
Yeah, that is...
For a fucking child's mouth.
I mean, they talk about cost of living. No wonder they don't think it's a big issue. They're giving their kids $20 for a fucking tooth. So I went into it thinking the Herald Sun would be the worst place for a fluff piece. But then I found one outlet that does way more fluff pieces than anyone else.
Oh, yeah.
Crikey.
Oh, really?
Crikey has a series called Vote For Me, where they interview politicians and explain why you should vote for them. And they have a set of questions that they ask almost everyone. For some reason, the questions that involve policies just aren't asked to some of the people at all. These are the ones that make me the angriest. So one of the first questions is, what is the best thing that ever happened to you? Great journalistic integrity. What's the best thing that's ever happened to you? And then you have people like Zoe Daniel saying, my kiddos, Aki and Pear. And that's her answer, is her kids... Like what? Am I supposed to vote for the kids?
I feel like you don't like kids, John. I think I'd argue, answered the same way. I feel like you're not getting with the vibe.
Charles, I'm beginning to wonder if what's happened is that we've broken John.
Because he's been watching so much Sky News angry. And he's going, what's all this empathy going on?
He's angry, he's unhappy.
Well, you say that, but
then... Oh, they've got kids. Ah! Gotta hate them.
I can't have gone too far, right? Because the next one that annoyed me was One Nation's Gina Court, who also said, my kids. And then independent Nicole, who also said, parenting my kids. Kayla Tink said, my three kids.
I think I know what's going on, listeners, which is John used to work in a childcare facility.
Oh!
And so his whole idea that anyone could ever like a child...
Or have their life enriched by one.
But I did find one answer that is more annoying than the almost every single person who just said my kids, which is Animal Justice Party's Ivan Davis, who said, realizing that I could do more for my country and our world than simply going vegan and buying an electric car.
But to be fair, that is the most self-aware vegan I've ever heard of.
Yes, yes. The epiphany that everything I've been doing, it doesn't really matter. That's great.
Yeah, all of my,
honestly,
going vegan and buying electric cars
is fucking hilarious.
They were just empty gestures. However, the problem with the argument is that his view seems to be that running for the Animal Justice Party and not winning a seat in Parliament is somehow a greater contribution. No, it's another empty gesture that does nothing.
The next hard-hitting question that I found from these journalists are, what would your final meal be? And Zoe Daniels' answer is anything with my family.
Aww.
Which is not an answer.
You gotta realize, John, I don't think you realize.
Classic politician non-answer.
Like every politician, even Zoe Daniels, like the one part of their life that isn't absolutely shit and devoted to being a politician is the moments they spend with their children. And they're very brief. Most of them only see their children like a couple of days a month, right? That's the only bit of their life that isn't objectively shit.
Yes. And also, you know, if you actually answer roast chicken, then there'll be vegans coming out and saying you shouldn't do that.
And you want a focus group to what your favourite food is.
Nah,
so that's why they always say family.
Yes. I want to eat my family.
Well, she's the only one who said it like that, but there's more non-answers.
Mm.
Like Tink said, hopefully it's a really long way off. Food food for me is more an act than it is a taste. So whatever it is, I hope it's being cooked surrounded by family and friends. Which is just a longer way to say the first answer.
Mm.
Some One Nation's Gina Court said, my final meal wouldn't be about the food, but who I shared it with.
I think these are all just based on being a human being.
Well, she's made a big mistake there. She's varied from the party line because her answer should have been, following Pauline Hanson, if you're reading this, then I'm already dead.
Well, luckily she does get back on the party line because she starts listing foods she doesn't like.
Oh, okay.
So she starts saying anything except for tripe, liver, kidneys, and pea and ham soup. So classic One Nation, they have a political answer and then go, but also keep all this stuff away from me.
They're just against, they're only against, classic opposition.
And the a Greens candidate, Jane Anelzark, I probably said that wrong, I love eating and it depends on where I was, but I think maybe I'll go for crepes, lemon and sugar.
Oh, that's a brilliant answer. That is such an innocuous food. Can you alienate anyone with a lemon and sugar crepe politically? They're vegan, aren't they? Yeah, just flour.
Yeah. Maybe the anti-sugar lobby.
Oh, yes. People, I quit sugar. That's a mistake. That's a faux pas. Yes. That's a gaffe.
Also, classic Green going for crepes over something. Like, you'd expect most politicians, if they're trying to come, like, spending time thinking of the answer, which her answer is the only one that has an ellipses before she said the actual food, that she came up with crepes when most politicians probably be like, I want a meat pie.
Isn't that what the Greens really are? It's just an ellipsis in Australian politics. They're just a little pause.
But there's also Labor's Catherine Renshaw said, beer and a steak, I haven't had that combo in 30 years. Am I supposed to relate to someone who is openly saying that they love beer and steak but haven't eaten it for 30 years?
No, it's both sidesism, isn't it? Because she's appealing to both people who like beer and steak and people who haven't eaten in 30 years. That is very good. She's opposition leader material.
I thought it was very classic Labor to say that you like something, but you haven't acted on that idea at all.
That's true. That's core Labor. Yeah.
The worst one of all, and the person who, out of reading every fluff piece I've read so far, I have hated the most, is Labor's Jason Scans, who I'll read the full interview now. If you could change one thing in Australia, what would it be? Scott Morrison government. What is the worst thing anyone has said to you? I voted for Scott Morrison. What is the best thing that's happened to you? My wife. Who or what is the biggest threat to Australia? Scott Morrison and Peter Dutton. Who's your favourite historical figure? Bob Hawke. What would your favourite meal be? Meat pie, iced coffee and Bundaberg rum.
So to be fair to Jason, it's very clear that that questionnaire took him no more than 45 seconds. So I think it's probably the appropriate amount of time.
And it was on message. I think that's perfect.
But, I mean, it's genuine. Like, first of all, meat pie, iced coffee and Bundaberg rum is a very weird combination of a meal.
Oh, look, now you're combination food shaming. Like, John, like, your brain has just been rotted by Sky News.
John, and the other thing is, this is from Crikey, right?
Yeah.
If you're from the Labor Party, you don't need to those people are already voting for you. Crikey's readers are already, you don't need 45 seconds of your time. Charles, what can we give John to do for the final week of the campaign to try and just
balance him
rebuild
out?
Rebuild some of the great green shoots of the happy John we used to know.
Yes, you're right.
I think I'm great. I don't know why people would say I'm not happy. I am very happy in this moment right now.
He is now not happy John, isn't he?
Is that's not who happy he is. John. Yeah, I don't know.
Should we get him to cover something that isn't the election? That's the only thing I can think of.
Maybe he should cover the wash-up from the Philippine election. So
yes, by the way, yeah, Marcos won. Yeah,
he won.
That'll cheer him up.
Yeah, maybe not. Oh, why don't we get him to cover U.S. politics? That'll go great.
Has anything happened in U.S. politics?
Animals stuck up trees.
Or what about the...
All animals are stuck up, I think. You see them with their greeny trees.
What about the war in Ukraine? Just something sort of nice.
Can you fill us in on the war in Ukraine next week? Just so that it's less depressing than you having to watch all this election content.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Election news you can't trust. The Chaser Report.
Joining us now is David Shoebridge. He used to be in the upper house of New South Wales Parliament, but he is now running for the Senate for the Greens in this upcoming election. David Shoebridge, welcome to the show.
Yeah, cheers, Charles. Cheers, Kevin.
Now, you are the brains, I believe, behind this whole Greens policy around paying artists money to create art. What's all that about?
Well, it was it's actually a fair bit of collaboration. I'd also give a shout out to Mandy Nolan, who's running for us up in the seat of Richmond on the North Coast. In her professional career, she's a stand-up comic, and she says she wants to get into Parliament and be the only intentionally funny person in the House. So she was actually really important in the development of this policy as well. But it's about firstly responding to the last 2.5 years of, you know, cancelled gigs, lockdowns, and that just smashed the creative industries across the state, across the whole country, smashed the creative industries. And also when support was rolled out in the form of JobKeeper, because of the way in which many artists get paid, they found it really hard to access some of those payments. And that's been a continuing theme. So we had a look around the rest of the world to work out who best supports arts. And it turns out France and Ireland have some pretty amazing schemes to support artists and support arts. It's not just the soft cheese and the wine that means we see a lot of French culture and art. It's actually because they actually pay their artists. And France, in fact, supports 250,000 artists with a wage subsidy every year. So we looked around. We wanted to get the best solution. We've come up with this artist wage package, and we're pretty proud of it, actually.
Now, we've actually got a proper artist here, which is Gabby Bold.
Bold of you to call me a proper artist. That's right. I am an artist, yes.
But I just want to run you through, Gabby, the details of the policy and see whether you think this is a terrible idea or just a waste of taxpayers' money. So the question is...
Two great options.
That's a good binary choice.
Which is, so the whole idea is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, David, it's basically that the government will pay you the minimum wage, basically, which is, $23 an hour, $21 an hour, that type of wage, to just, sit on your ass and create stuff. Like that's how it works, isn't it?
Charles, are you aware that that's what you pay me to do? That's like, I took this job because it was a wage to make art. That is the reason I work here. I don't actually like any of
you. Wait a minute. Hey, David.
Unlike Charles, though, we'll pay minimum wage.
Amazing. Because right now I'm getting the wage of a 13-year-old worker at McDonald's. It is not good.
This is the problem with this whole policy, David, which is it's crimping the style of people who want to exploit artists.
Oh. Yeah.
And actually lifting up their conditions so we can't afford them anymore. This is a real problem. I mean,
can I tell you, when we had a bunch of consultation with a whole bunch of artists with this, and one of the things they said was, wow, but, you know, that's so much money. You know, $771 a week, that's so much money. Are you sure that this is the right figure? And we say it's minimum wage. Like, it's minimum wage.
Is it really?
We're actually having to persuade artists that it was
for a 40-hour week.
That was, the figure was right. And So the package is for just, it's a one-year pilot. This one is a one-year pilot program to support 10,000 artists across the country.
Wait, there is one fundamental problem with this, David. It's too good. And to be an artist, you have to have pain.
You got to suffer.
You have to suffer for your art. You know, like that's the whole, that's the thing. If we're living off a cushy minimum wage and able to put away super and health insurance and maybe buy a house one day if the houses also come down in price miraculously, what are we going to write art about? All of our art's going to be happy, soulless crap.
We kind of, That was also part of the discussion. We don't think actually being hungry and not knowing where your next meal's coming from, not knowing if you're going to have secure housing is really essential to create art.
That is simply not true.
We kind of skew the arts to a kind of upper middle class trust fund kind of artist.
No.
We kind of think you might make better art when you're not hungry.
No, that's true.
But that's not true. The best song in Gabby's last show was all about hooking up with a house owner.
And well, that's not what it was about.
No. It was like it was called "I Want a House Sit for You."
Yeah.
And it was
I can still sing that on minimum wage. Minimum wage is getting me a house, Charles.
You can sing about how shit the housing market is on minimum wage, Charles. That's right. Perfectly okay.
Yeah. David, I'm on board. But the only thing I don't want is happiness. Then, so I'll just find another way to make myself depressed.
The other thing, we launched it with a couple of great stand-up comedians on Saturday, and as they said, you know, this is going to mean that you no longer have the funniest barista in town. You actually have an artist.
But what do the cafes think of this?
Time and isn't doing, you know, three jobs plus a 3-hour commute plus struggling to actually create art at the end of it all. We want to convert the funniest barista in town into the single best stand-up.
But aren't you going to, like, what's going to happen to the price of coffee then? What? You're going to push up the price of baristas. This is just the title. You haven't thought anything through.
Or, Charles, people might get jobs.
Yeah.
People might get entry-level hospo jobs that actually need them.
I feel like you're thinking too much about the artists and thinking about, you know.
Not enough about the consumer.
Local business.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, but look, the other thing we do with it is we want to do it in partnership with local government. And we actually, one of the things I really like about the policy is we get councils around the state to actually bid to be an artist council, and they have to have a kind of plan for what they're going to do over the next 12 months in their local area to integrate artists into the tourism economy, make their local art, their art scene thrive. And we kind of do it in partnership with local government because we think local government have some of the best connections on the ground and would know how to get the biggest bang out of the buck and help us identify the artists. So we kind of like that. It's not going to be done by a great big central Commonwealth bureaucracy. We're going to do that at a grassroots level as well.
That is actually the best thing I've heard about this policy.
Well, I will say on a country town level, you're all of a sudden going to see councils listing football players as artists. But, I mean, apart from that,
we are going to have national minimum criteria.
Criteria!
Going to have some criteria. And that's going to be you have to be an artist. But mind you, you know, if you can prove your ball skills.
Yeah, I reckon you take the ball away, it's interpretive dance, isn't it?
Does it include bullshit artists?
They will be front and centre. Yeah. Look, the other thing is, does it recognises the creative industry, creative industries, contributes like $15 billion to the economy, never gets talked about. There are like four times as many creatives in the arts industry as there are coal miners.
Yeah.
Yet, you know, the coal industry just gets billions of dollars of subsidies and the creative industries gets bugger all. So, you know, this isn't like I couldn't afford this policy myself. It costs $270 million. I couldn't afford it. But when you compare it to the, you know, the bucket loads, the train loads, the lorry loads of funds that go into supporting the coal industry, and we get 10,000 artists to be amazing for a year for $277 million. We think it's money well spent.
Well, I think coal miners are getting more money than artists for the simple reason that, you know, the whole suffer for your art thing, they are, you know, taking part in suffering for your art. They're just making the world suffer. So I think it's like they're owed that money, you know. I feel like it makes sense that the coal industry get 10 times what an artist does for the amount of suffering inflicted. Doesn't say you have to suffer yourself.
Oh, I see. I like that.
Yeah. So I just start being an asshole and all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah.
Coal subsidy. That works, isn't it?
Well, Yeah, I coal miners aren't the problem. Coal mining companies are the problem.
Yeah.
The government is the problem. Policy settings are the problem. Coal miners are trying to do what we're all trying to do. Yeah.
Said like a politician who wants everyone's vote.
But look, we got sort of pushback from a little bit of sort of right-wing media about this.
What?
But you'd be surprised. But by and large, when you talk to people about actually valuing artists, giving them, we're talking about giving artists minimum wage, and you compare our project, which is for 10,000 artists and seems amazing in the Australian perspective, to the French scheme, which pays, as I said, a quarter of a million artists under their scheme and has been doing it since the 1930s. It goes to how far we have to go.
But does that mean we'll end up with a whole lot of boring films that don't make any sense?
Sorry. What do you mean boring? Boring films. Have you not seen Ratatouille? It's like the most incredible French movie ever. Yeah, it's set in France, isn't it?
It's set in France.
I do expect we would get a lot of angst produced with this. Like, we've got 10,000 artists that got the whole year to, you know, contemplate life, the universe and everything. I expect a fair bit of angst to come out of this, a fair bit of internal soul searching, and some pretty dark places will be discovered over the 12 months.
You'd hate to be 10,001, wouldn't you? I'm not good enough. How do you audition?
Yeah.
Do you have to audition?
Lismore Council wouldn't support me.
Oh,
fuck.
True.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, that would be shit.
David Shoebridge, thanks for your time.
Cheers. Good speaking.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rigging elections since before it was cool, the Chaser Report.
Time now for a segment we call
Stupid Questions Only.
Where we answer your questions from Twitter at 2@Chaser with the proviso that only stupid questions are welcome. Charles, are you ready?
Yes, we've got lots of questions this week. The first one is from Andrew Rutherford, who asks, are there any more MPs that are the result of a Chaser stunt gone wrong, like Mark Latham was?
Well, are we in a position to reveal who else we planted in the party? Because there's a lot.
Yeah,
there's a lot of them.
I'd say it's roughly tracking to about half the party. How many coalition members are there?
Well, there'll be one more if Catherine Deves wins. I got to say, though, the one I'm most proud of is Bob Catter.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a long game. He was there long before the Chaser was even founded.
I'm just surprised because it's so obvious. Like, I just can't believe no one's sort of picked him as a Chaser.
It's a magnificent performance. I mean, I think that there should be acting awards to the real man behind Bob Catter. What's his name again?
Craig Rucastle.
That's right. This one's from Andrew Rollison. How difficult is it to swap out a solid beam rear suspension for a control blade independent rear suspension system?
That is very hard. Like, do not try that. I tried that once and my slip diffs it was just terrible.
I think Andrew's made a mistake there. We asked for stupid questions only, whereas that's a sensible question posed to stupid people.
Ah, yes.
So a big mistake there.
If my polling booth doesn't offer democracy sausages, am I still compelled to vote? Now, this is a question I raised a few days ago on the podcast, because our PNC, who's organising the barbecue at our local polling booth, just doesn't know how to do a barbecue anymore. It's been 2.5 years since the pandemic started. We don't have the practice. It's going to be a schmozzle. It's the sausage sizzle schmozzle, right? And I believe in compulsory voting, but not without a sausage in your mouth.
I mean, the thing to do is to set aside a whole day and just trek from booth to booth within your electorate.
Yes.
And just find the one place that has a sausage.
Look, I think with this pre-polling, there really needs to be thought put into having barbecue.
Yeah, barbecues for the two weeks. It's
for
a big
the two
problem.
Weeks outside the pre-poll. Because, you know, I walked past a pre-poll booth the other day. And, you know, tons of people milling around, no sausage.
I mean, I think it's on the AEC at this point. Yes. The AEC organises teams of people to actually conduct the election. Would it be so hard for them to just have a couple more people at every polling place sizzling sausages? I mean, I used to go and vote at the biggest booth in New South Wales at the town hall, and there was never ever a barbecue there.
Well, this is why I've always said that I think Bunnings should actually run our elections.
They should.
Because they would be much better at getting those sausages.
Yeah, and they'd beat the AEC's price by 5%. What about this one? Is the United Australia Party left or right wing? I can't work it out from their policies. I think nor can they, Charles. Mm.
It depends whether you mean are they trying to steal left-wing votes and then deliver them as preferences to Liberal Party things. Well, yes, that is exactly what they're doing.
They've got a lot of lefty policies like free education, but if you look at where the preferences are, you'll see what they really are, which is neither left nor right wing, just basically
the Liberal
another
Party.
Member of the Liberal coalition.
Yes, that's right.
With all the buzz around independence, Charles, why doesn't the Chaser take advantage and start a political party called Independence and win the election by a landslide? What a brilliant idea from Andrew Oh.
I like that idea.
The Independent Party.
The Independent Party. Yeah.
The Contradiction in Terms Party.
And we can, and our official movie could be Independence Day.
Oh, God. I'm surprised none of us have actually run. Like, surely we're at the point in our lives, in our mid-40s, the original Chaser people, that some of us should have become earnest enough to actually run for office.
Yeah, although I feel like none of us are dishonest enough. I'm going to run. I'm dishonest enough.
You are, actually.
I was thinking, what about me? I'm completely dishonest. Yeah, no, I'll run.
Didn't we already announce that you're running in the next New South Wales state election?
I'm running against Mark Latham in the next election. And my one policy is to vote whatever Mark Latham is not voting.
Yeah.
To just vote the opposite of Mark Latham. And then it's the best grift in the world because I won't have to do any research because he'll do all my research for me and I'll just do the opposite. And I can just sit in there and...
You can just run the Chaser from Parliament House.
I know.
That's a very good idea.
And I'll get staff and everything. This is a good one. Define what a woman is.
Isn't the answer to that question, you just find a quick way to shut it down without engaging in the whole thing?
Yeah.
They need the debate.
Treading on dangerous territory here. Well, no, but as two men, I think we're fully qualified to comment on what a woman is.
And my answer is whatever she wants to be.
Oh, isn't that nice?
So that I don't get in trouble.
Yep.
Will there be a vegan option for my sausage on polling day? I mean, no. No, Nimbin guy.
Yeah, well, I suppose it depends on your electorate.
Oh, hang on, if this person's voting in Nimbin, and to be honest, given the beard that Nimbin guy has, I suspect this person is voting in Nimbin.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you'll only have vegan sausages. That'll be the only option.
Yeah, but I mean, is that really a vote then? I mean, is that...
I think every vote in Nimbin is informal. By nature of being, everyone smokes the ballot paper.
They don't wear shoes. Very informal. Okay, that'll do.
This segment was...
Stupid Questions Only.
Thank you for the questions. We'll do it again next week.
We should get the AEC on to help us.
Our gears from Road Microphones. We're part of the Acast Creator Network, and we'll catch you again tomorrow.
See ya.